So are we about to go on the air?
I think we already are.
Oh.
All right, name the trumpet player.
Oh, you're out of my pay category.
I don't know who it is either. I just figured maybe you would.
I got it backwards. Just cherry pink and apple blossom white.
Maybe that was a young Doc Severinsen. Very young.
He played with Tommy Dorsey back in the 50s.
So did they call him pre-Doc Severinsen?
His name was Carl. His given name on the birth certificate was Carl, and Doc was just the nickname.
They called him Intern Severinsen. Well, are we on this radio network tonight? Are we on it right now?
Yes, we are.
Welcome, everybody. Somebody ought to introduce this.
Hope you enjoyed our warm-up show.
This is our annual Monitor anniversary show, commemorating NBC Radio's Monitor, which debuted 67 years ago yesterday on the NBC Radio Network. Welcome, everybody.
Absolutely, and Walden will eventually turn the music down, and they will really get started.
I think so.
They're playing your hit parade.
I don't hear Dinah Shore. Are we on the red and the blue tonight?
Yes, we are.
Welcome, everybody. Somebody ought to intro this thing.
Walden,
John, you're there. Walden's there. George Miller, you're there. And I'm Dennis Hart.
Yes. Here. Yeah,
absolutely.
And we come here every year for a while to talk about money.
Yeah, Walden might remember when we started, but it's been a while.
It is. And Monitor was here for a while. I don't know what the mix is right now. I can only hear myself with music in the background. Can anybody else hear me?
Yeah.
Monitor was probably the greatest show in the history of network radio. 20 years on NBC, 20,000 hours. And we're here to talk about it tonight.
And good
Thank
evening,
you for
everybody.
The
it's
ending.
Monday night, June 13th, 2022. I'm Walden Hughes. Hello, John. How are you doing?
Oh, we already did 5 minutes, Walden.
I know that.
We did.
I know that. I was trying to test this in the background, you know. But
it's probably worked out okay, but just for those who weren't paying attention, why don't you tell us what we're going to be doing tonight, Walden?
I have no idea.
Well, good.
I never know what we're going to do. You know that.
We're talking Monitor. That's what we're going to do.
Wallen's been monitoring the situation for quite a while, so he's up to date. And how many years have we done this, Walden?
2005.
Wow.
17 years.
17 years. Commemorating the greatest show in the history of network radio, Monitor, which saved the NBC radio network for all those years, brought in tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars. And was an absolute revelation in broadcasting. Pat Weaver created it in 55. It went everywhere and did everything. It was your weekend-long companion around the country and around the world. And, boy, we're happy to talk about Monitor because it had such a great legacy for NBC and for radio networking in general. And tonight we are joined again for the second year in a row by George Miller. And I have to say something about George. George, welcome.
Thank you. You know, you said tens of millions of dollars. And you and me and Louie in Louisiana, all three of us, never saw a dime.
No. We are, however, along with the great late Warren Gerby, we are the,
yes.
I think, the savers of Monitor. We have a website, monitorbeacon.net. For those of you who've never been there, you can go to it right now, monitorbeacon.net. Hundreds of hours of the radio show on the air. Warren Gerby. Recorded hundreds of hours. And George Miller, you're the one who got in contact with Warren Gerby 20 years ago. Tell us how you got in contact with Warren and how you got all those tapes.
Well, everything was an accident. I got in touch with Warren about 1995 via a now defunct fan magazine. It was called Old Time Radio Digest, and they had a classified section in the back of the pages, and I put a classified ad in there, and he had a classified ad in there. So I gave him a call one time. We chatted, and I think that was the only time we chatted. But make a long story short, I had sent him a reel-to-reel tape of the little monitor I had, like one broadcast, and I sent him a letter. And fast forward 5 years, he dies, unfortunately, at the age, tender young age of 55 back in the year 2000. And the two people that were handling his estate came across the letter I had written him, and they contacted me and said Warren had passed, and, you know, he's got all these, he had hundreds of reels of monitor that he recorded. Would there be any interest in it? And I fired back, and I called him up, and they gave me their phone number. I said, yes, by all means. So I made them an offer, and it was agreeable to both parties. And in short order, I had like a garage full of these reel-to-reel tapes that Warren had recorded between, you know, the earliest one in the collection was from 1964, and it went to about 1972, I believe, before it petered out. But there were at least 500 reels of reel-to-reel tape that he had recorded over the years.
500 reels of tape, and about how many hours on each reel?
It depends on how he recorded it. Most of these were recorded at 3 3/4 inches a second, double track. So, you know, say, you know, it wasn't quarter track where you'd get like four times the amount. It was like, it averaged about, depending on the length of the tape, it was either, he either used 1,200 foot reels or 24 or 3,600 reels. It depended on how the length of the reel of tape, but there's no telling, you know, without me taking out the slide rule, just how much, you know, he got in total. But it's loads of material, and most of it was in very good sound. Unfortunately, he recorded it with a microphone as opposed to a RCA patch cord into the radio and directly into the recorder. But for a mic recorded material, it wasn't half bad. It was pretty good. And, you know, with the modern computer technology, I can bring it up to par with modern sound qualities in most instances, except he had a dog that would bark every so often, I don't know, in hostility to maybe a visitor in the room or whatever. Maybe he was hungry, but through the modern miracle of digital editing, I've in most cases edited out the dog, so the dog will never get full credit for Warren's efforts.
Though there are some barking that you can hear on some of the hours of monitor, just here and there, and that makes it endearing. Now, think about this. Here's a young man, 20 years old. He was 5 years older than I was, okay, at that time. And he's recording from the time he's about, you know, 20, 25, maybe into his 30s. He, every weekend, virtually every weekend, he's recording this program that's on the air for much of the weekend in his house in Queens, New York. And unlike the rest of us, we record an hour or two and probably then erase it or record over it, and maybe we save 2 or 3 hours. He saves hundreds, hundreds of hours of monitor. It's the greatest collection anyone has, and you have it, George. You are the keeper of all of this, and I give you full credit. We've been doing this now for 42 months, 10 hours a month.
Yes.
George listens to the reel-to-reels, digitizes them, discards ones that are inferior quality. We, you know, some of them have slices in them and they make no sense. It's a, and George goes through all of that, sends it to our buddy Louie in Louisiana, who's been a part of this website for 20 years.
Yes. His full name is on his birth certificate. Reads Louis Castang. He's in Covington, Louisiana.
And he's a good friend.
We talk at least once a week, I'd say.
And I don't talk
One of my dear friends, I don't have a clue what he looks like. It's just a voice to me. But next time I talk to him, I'm going to ask him that he emails me a photograph of his face. It's just a voice. He knows what I look like, but I don't know what he looks like. So if you're listening, Louis, send me a photograph of yourself, would you?
Wait a minute. This sounds very strange and difficult to listen to. Two older men exchanging pictures. But I do not talk to you guys because you guys talk so much. But I'm on the receiving end of this near the end of the month, because after you processed it, he's processed it, I get it, and I listen to it, of course, and I log it, and I put it up on the website at the end of my – I write the continuity for the website. So by the time you guys are done, it's a surprise to me what you're going to send me. I have no idea what's going to happen. So it's been going on for 42 months, 10 hours a month, 420 hours have come in of monitor. And I want to tell you, this is now a website that has more than 500 hours of monitor and NBC radio material on it. It's one of the greatest websites, OTR-wise, in terms of hours, anywhere in the world. I know that the Jack Benny Show, you have 930 half hours, which is about 450 hours. But we now have more than 500 hours. And, George, you just told me before this broadcast, we have maybe as many coming in over the next years.
Yes, we've got but I found about a year ago, I found another box of reel-to-reel tapes. It was about 60 tapes that I forgot that I had in my storage unit, and I brought them home, and I called, I contacted you guys, and I said, boy, you know, if you think, you know, you've got a big stash now, just wait. There's another stash I found. So I was in the middle of I had segued into 1968, so I found out that I had like 34 more reels from 1967. So that's what I've been doing for the last year. And then there's about 34 more reels from 1968 and probably an equal amount from 1969. So, yeah, it's a treasure trove. It's just the tip of the iceberg, what's out there already and versus what's coming. So,
George, I'm taking all the vitamins I can take to stay healthy, but why don't we is there any way to expedite this? Can you start doing maybe 100 hours a month for the next few months?
Well, if you know any good cloning doctors, sir, I'm all yours.
What is it like, George? Now, you're using a reel-to-reel tape recorder, right? One reel-to-reel tape recorder to play these?
Yes. Well, I've got about six of them here, so, you know.
Wow.
You know, Noah in the Ark, he only took two of everything. I've got about six of everything, so just a heads the bet.
So you have to listen to a monitor in real time, as does Lewis, as do I. So on a monthly basis, this is taking a lot of time collectively for us.
Well, for every minute, it takes about 2 minutes to process and to clean up and everything.
So how much cleanup do you have to do? How much processing do you
have to do? Well, the thing is about it is, there's things like clicks and pops and hiss and background noises, barking dogs. Every so often, Warren would break out in song, so he gets excised out of it too into eternity. So, yeah, there's a lot, it's a wild card. I processed a reel just the other day, a half-hour Henry Morgan show, and it was like from Thanksgiving time of 1967, and his family must have had visitors in the room or something, but there's a little kid, like about a four-year-old kid that's giggling and laughing, so he got trimmed out of the broadcast for posterity. So yeah, there's all, and then one broadcast, he was during the summertime. He must have had the window. He lived in an apartment building with his parents in Flushing, New York, and it must have been a hot summer day, and I can only visualize this, but you can distinctly hear – well, no, you can't because I cut it out, but I distinctly heard a bus driving past his apartment building, which was removed from the final recording. So little things like that.
So you've got hundreds of tapes. What kind of condition – were these kept in a garage, do you know? Were they kept in this house? In other words, tape disintegrates over time. What kind of condition were these tapes in?
Well, before I received them, I have no clue. Maybe he had them stacked up in his bedroom or his living room or his dining room. But once I had it, I put it into a storage unit, which is climate controlled. It's been there for like 20 years. The odyssey behind that. Before we connected, I was trying desperately because I noticed, your website there. And for years, I futilely tried to make contact with anybody because there's a lot of people that, would comment and, make a long story short, I finally connected with Lewis Casting in Louisiana, and he instantly got back to me. He was doubtful as to, he thought I was, giving him a line or something, but because I told him I had hundreds of reels of this stuff, and he thought I was just making it up. And, slowly but surely, I won his confidence, and he's a believer now, I think. But yeah, there's plenty of this stuff. So,
well, I remember when I first talked to you and this is 3.5 years ago, and we started doing this right at the first of the year, 3.5 years ago. So I maybe talked to you in February, and
yes.
I asked you, Because I figured, okay, this guy must never only has a dozen hours. I mean, that's great. We wanted new hours. We were always looking for new hours. We didn't know if anybody had any. And you told me that weekend, I'll never forget this. I think it was a Saturday. I said, how many hours do you think we have here? And I'm expecting, again, 10 or 15 hours. And you said, well, potentially hundreds. And I said, hundreds of hours of monitor? How is that possible, hundreds of hours? And then you told me about the tapes. And I nearly... What's the word I can use on the radio here tonight without sounding – I was stunned by this. And my first thought was, well, number one, this is incredible. And number 1A, can we all live long enough to get this on the air? Can we live long enough?
Well, the thing about it, too, is Warren didn't – you know, I guess he was he was in high school when he recorded most of this stuff, the bulk of it. So, you know, he had limited resources to, you know, invest in tape. And he used the absolute cheapest tape he could find, you know, the bargain basement variety of tape, you know, these no-name brands. I mean, it wasn't Scotch or Ampex. It was these names that you would never recognize. And I was doubtful as to, you know, whether these things would even play back. But, you know, he invested his money quite wisely because, you know, these cheap brands of tapes held up just as well as the Scotch and the Ampexes did.
So you have now gone through, again, we've put up more than 400 hours in the last 3.5 years with that many or more coming in. You've listened to it now more than you ever have, probably. You tell me, because I certainly know why Monitor was important and interesting and entertaining. What's your reaction to what this show was on NBC Radio and its impact on the nation?
Well, you know, I was never into rock and roll, and back in the middle 60s when I was kind of like – my parents' generation, Perry Como and Sinatra and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, that kind of stuff appealed to me. And our local NBC owned and operated was WMAQ, which is long gone, unfortunately. But anyhow, about the middle 60s, I kind of landed on, a Monitor one day, and I kind of liked what I heard. And, Gene Rayburn and Ed McMahon, you know, I knew him from television. So I just stayed with it, and, I listened to it as much as WMAQ would air it. And, I guess the rest is history. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, as time passed, the affiliates, they kind of drifted off into, local varieties. You know, they went to the local disc jockeys and all that stuff. So, you know, the faucet eventually got turned off there from the full broadcast of, you know, back in – when it was first launched in 1955, it was a service that was offered throughout the entire weekend, starting on Friday night through like late Sunday night. And, with the passage of time and changes in technology and tastes and all that stuff, it just kind of dwindled down, just like, you know, it's like a parabolic curve at, starts out slow and it reaches a peak and that starts slowly settling down again. So that's just the nature of just about anything.
You know, it's so interesting. And I had the same experience as you did, George. I got into Monitor in the early 1960s and listened to Jim Backus and Mel Ellen and Gene Rayburn, et cetera, hosting. And I was entranced by it because here I am a kid and this is something so big sounding compared to rock radio that I was listening to. And it was big sounding because it came from Radio Central, the fifth floor of the RCA building. And it was full of information and entertainment and fabulous stars that I knew from television. And that was the beauty of Monitor that Pat Weaver, the president of NBC Radio, had created in 1955. He knew that radio networking was dying because of television, losing its audience. So he came up with a show that had everything. And if you didn't like what you were listening to at the moment you tuned in, stick around. It's going to change. It had comedy, news, sports, live remotes from around the world. It had everything going on with big name stars putting it together. And for a 13 or 14-year-old kid, me, I was entranced by it. There was nothing else like it on radio and nothing like it since. It was a revelation. It was the internet of its time because it kept you in instantaneous contact with everything going on in the world. It was fantastic. It was an incredible creation.
Yeah, it was something for everybody. If you don't like what you're listening to right now, listen another minute or two and something is going to pop up that's going to hold your interest.
And it was incredibly expensive to put on the air because you had all of these NBC personalities, dozens each weekend on the air, plus producers, of course, writers, etc.
And you get the likes of David Brinkley, Arlene Francis, Frank Blair, you know, it's all the television talent, they siphon them to the monitor studios.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from my point of view, 1966 or 67 was the highlight, the peak, if you will. It had 30 million listeners a weekend, one out of every six Americans. That would be the equivalent, by the way, of about 50 million television watchers today, and nobody gets that except the Super Bowl. Nobody in the world gets it. So it had everybody listening to it across the country. And in 67, they had all this talent on the air. I mean, just the sports talent each weekend on monitor. Mel Ellen, former voice of the Yankees. Joe Garagiola, former voice of the Yankees. Kirk Gowdy, the NBC television sportscaster. Sandy Koufax, who just retired as the Dodgers' greatest pitcher and the greatest pitcher in baseball. Lindsey Nelson, the voice of the Mets. Jim Simpson. They had those were just the sports guys. And as you mentioned, every weekend, Arlene Francis, Hugh Downs, Joyce Brothers, Frank Blair,
Chet Huntley, too, comes to mind. Chet Huntley, yeah.
Think about that talent on the air. While the other radio networks were in the process of dying and cutting back, here was NBC still audaciously putting on this ridiculously expensive show on weekends and making it work.
No doubt about it.
So I hope we have intrigued people who are listening to us wherever you're listening around the world. You really need to find out about Monitor because it told you it's an example of what in the 1960s network radio could still do if it just had the will. CBS, ABC, Mutual, they didn't have the will, but NBC did. And here's a show that if it were put on the air today would work on weekends. It would be fabulously expensive to put on the air, obviously. But, I mean, my gosh, hundreds of hours, thanks to George Miller and Warren Gerby and Louis Castang, on monitorbeacon.net. If you haven't been there, tune in. It's all free. All these hours are free, and you can tune in and hear what a great radio show sounded like. And to this day, I am still excited about Monitor and having heard it for 50 years. And I love the show, as I presume you do, George.
And may I butt in here, if I may, if any of our listening audience should by any chance have any recordings, homemade or whatever, of Monitor, please contact us. Contact me. I'll get it one way or another from you and return the tape or whatever media you recorded it on, just so we can get it up on our tribute page.
George, I'm pretty sure no one has any more hours than you do. And
not even the Library of Congress.
No. But if you do, you know, you can contact us through the website.
Yes.
We'd love to hear from you. But it's all due to you and Warren and Lewis, and I come in at the rear end each month and put this thing on the air, and we are very pleased and proud to do that. This was a great.
And I got to tell you too that you know, the people that dial into the tribute site, it's approaching 500,000 now. We're at about over 450,000 hits on it, I believe.
Very close now, and we're getting
yes.
2,500 to 3,000 a month. And we were languishing for a long time until you came along because we didn't have any new audio to put up there for a long time. And now every month it's 10 hours, and we have more than 200 hours of Monitor from 1967. We're about to get into 68. By the way, George, do we have some Christmas stuff coming from 67 still? Do we have any more stuff?
I sent you some the last time. I think we're all pretty well drained out of the 67 Christmas stuff, but there's got to be a whole lot of stuff from 68 that we're going to segue into pretty soon.
Yeah. And 68, by the way, is a different year because as you'll
remember, my gosh, it was such an action-packed, news-driven year, too.
Gosh.
So much stuff.
It was a terrible
1963 and 1968 were the most news-driven years in my whole lifetime.
Yep. And Monitor in 67, right before that year of 68 hit, it was as lighthearted as it was ever going to be. You had new jingles on the air. You had a new music list. You had great hosts, Gene Rayburn, Saturday Morning Perfect, McMahon, Saturday Afternoon Perfect, Ted Steele, Saturday Night Wonderful, Henry Morgan, Sunday Afternoon, Brad Crandall, WNBC talk show host, Sunday Night. But it was before the horrible events of 1968, and that would, by necessity, changed the way Monitor sounded because it had to cover those horrible events. So 67 is what I would call the last lighthearted year, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and it got real hot and heavy after that, unfortunately. It's just the way history played out.
And so this is not only a website full of entertaining hours, It's an historically significant website because already for 68, we have Sunday Night Monitor on the night Lyndon Johnson announces he would not run for re-election, which shocked the nation, okay? We have a little bit of the weekend where Robert Kennedy was being brought back to Washington after being assassinated, and I'm sure there's going to be more coming up. All yes. of this taking place in real time, live on NBC Radio, and this is going to be a year for historians. If you're ever doing anything, if you have research you're doing, Monitor will be a source for you.
Well, you know, the funny thing, it's not funny, but it's just historical fact, but I myself listen to these recordings, and it brings back memories of things I forgot or else I never knew in the first place as they were occurring.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The night again, the President Johnson announces he's not running. Hi, are we still on the
air? Listen to that. The reporters were totally caught off guard. They came back like Ralph Cramden after he made the announcement. Like, hum, hum, hum. They didn't know what to say. They were so taken off guard.
And Joe Garagiola, and we have a little bit of him on that Saturday afternoon as the train carrying Robert Kennedy's body is coming back to Arlington.
Yes.
Joe Garagiola can barely keep it together because he's operating in real time, and this is a catastrophe for the nation, and you hear it in the reporters' voices and his voice.
Okay, we have a call. Rob from Sacramento, you're on with Dennis and Joy. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
I have to commend you guys for saving this program. I think I ran across it by accident about maybe 5 years ago or so. And, you know, I listened to just about, not quite everything, but mostly I've listened to most of it. Some of it, it's like opening a Christmas present when you guys add more content to the website all the time.
Can I ask you this? How old are you? Did you listen to it when it was originally broadcast, or are you just a newcomer?
Oh, no. I listened to it when I was a kid.
Okay, we're about the same age group then.
I'm 71 years old.
Oh, you got me beat by 1 year, so.
So you listen to it on KCRA in Sacramento, right? KCRA Radio?
Yes, that was it. KCRA Radio, yeah.
Sure. Great radio.
And weekends, of course, was when my father was home from work, because he would work 5 days a week away from the family and come home on Friday nights. And of course, there was things that he needed to get done for the weekend. And so I tagged along, and Monitor was in the car as we went places and did things, which was their slogan, by the way.
That's exactly right, Rob.
And the thing it brings back a lot of childhood memories. I mean, clear up until the time I graduated high school, which was 1969. So, and I was listening to that show when I could after I graduated until I went in the Army.
Well, just listening, if nothing else, just listening to some of the commercials brings back a flood of memories, too.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yes. And a lot of forgotten products that don't exist anymore.
Like VM, the Voice of Music.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Your experience is the same as mine. I grew up listening to Monitor. It was on my dad's car radios. We drove around. My dad and I didn't have a lot in common, but we did have Monitor in common. He loved that show.
Yes.
And when he was in the garage working on weekends, repairing a car or something, he'd have it on our local station, which was KMJ Radio in Fresno. And I grew up listening to Monitor with my father and fell in love with it forever because it just sounded so doggone big. You know what I mean?
And my father lost his father in 1960, and he acquired a Zenith floor model radio.
Oh, yes.
Made of all that pretty wood and stuff, and it stayed out in the garage, and it kept playing. It never stopped. And Monitor was on in the garage as well.
One of those big old consoles, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a big old console, yeah. I think it dated back to 1942, I would say, roughly.
Wow.
But what was it you liked about Monitor specifically? What did you really like about it?
I liked everything. I liked the variety. It kept you glued to the radio. It really did.
It did.
And the odd thing is that there are some people that consider Monitor to be a failure. And I go, wait a minute, I don't think so. Because Monitor was on the air for what? 20 years.
19 years. Exactly. Failures don't last 20 years.
No, I know that. Which I think is sad that they think that. But what I wanted to ask you, one thing I wanted to ask you, I had two questions, but one slipped out of my mind while waiting, but that's okay. What is the source of the early Monitor recordings from 1955 through 61? What source? I mean, if this man recorded from 1962 to 1972, what the early recordings that are on Monitor that you can listen to, like the premiere broadcast, where did those come from?
Dennis, you know the answer to that is all about Lewis.
Well, much of it is Lewis Castang, who lives in Louisiana, was one of our first people to visit the website back when it went up in 2000. And then once that went up, other people at random would have an hour or two that they would send us, and from all parts of the country, recorded, Schenectady, Chicago, Nashville, et cetera, et cetera. So for the first 17 years of the website, or 16 and a half, it was contributions from perhaps, I'll go so far as to say 20 people or so, each of them with an hour or two, which was typical because we all recorded it. We all thought it would go on forever. Therefore, we never kept it because it was always going to be something the next weekend. And then when George got hold of Warren stuff and contacted us, suddenly we had this massive inflow, unprecedented, unlike anything we'd ever seen. And so the only thing I can tell you is Lewis Castang provided us with a significant amount of material. He is still, we are happy to say, alive, as and we hope listening tonight from Louisiana. And other people just joined in because they were delighted that somebody was finally saving Monitor. And nobody had done it for all those years. And that was a shame. And that was why I put it up. Because
Lewis got the earliest recordings from the Library of Congress. He had to, sign off all these legal waivers and all this stuff, plus provide the Library of Congress a lot of cash in order for them to do the transfer and everything. And he got hours from the Library of Congress. And
Did NBC record these shows?
Well, they did, but they didn't save very many.
You couldn't
save 40 hours a weekend of tape because NBC wanted to reuse the tape, et cetera, just like they didn't save the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson in the early going. They wanted to reuse the videotape. So there's very little out there. In fact, I can say very confidently, with George backing me, our website has more Monitor than anybody else will ever have.
NBC, both NBC and NBC Radio and Television, was notorious for wiping videotapes and audio tapes to recycle them to save money.
Right.
I noticed something else that brought back a lot of memories, too. I noticed that many of the presenters weren't actually native to NBC. Many of them came from CBS. But Arlene Francis, for one,
Arlene, of course, was on What's My Line, but she was also on WNEW. No, I'm sorry. It was WOR in New York. So she was a widely known radio personality as well as a television personality on What's My Line. And so she was a natural. She knew how to do radio, and her name was widely known. But most of the folks on NBC, on Monitor, I mean, they were stars who had been elsewhere. They were widely known, and that's why they were hired. But most of them came from NBC. You know, Rayburn was on WNBC Radio and The Match Game, and the announcer on Tonight. Hugh Downs on The Today Show, and the announcer for Jack Parr on Tonight. So Barry Nelson, of course, was a star of stage and screen, and he was a great host for many years there. But yeah, the idea was that you had to have television names in order to get people to listen to radio in the 1950s and 60s. Weaver knew this, and he acted accordingly, and so did the radio network.
Every so often, you would hear somebody that was appearing in a Broadway play, or just was in town visiting, pop up as a replacement host or a guest host. Van Johnson stands out in mind. He was doing a local play in New York, and he turns up on early February 67, broadcast,
wow.
Guest hosting.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I had another question while you were talking, and then that went away.
Well, that's okay.
So, it just happens, you know.
I really enjoy
the website. Now, are these episodes downloadable?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's very difficult, and we have purposely made it difficult because in the early days, first of all of what's on the website, you can play for free. But in the early days, everything was, I don't want to say stolen. Let's say people obtained what we had up there and then began selling it on other websites for profit. And that was never my intention to have that happen.
No, I understand.
We made it very difficult to do it. I mean, I just thought it was wrong to make a profit off up Monitor, and so we made it more difficult. But you can
educational purposes only.
That's what it is.
Did NBC really make a profit from Monitor? I mean, as opposed to how much it cost to put the show on the air?
Oh God, yes. Especially from the very beginning, probably right until the late 60s, early 70s. Yeah, it was the most profitable show in network radio history, and it was single-handedly floating the NBC radio network for all those years. It was the single reason NBC went from red ink, which it had been in for years, to black ink in the late 50s and early 60s. Oh, it was immensely profitable because it was sold out. I mean, if you listen to what we've got in 1967, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon Monitor, it's loaded with spots. And so while they paid a lot of money to get all that talent on the air, it made money for the radio network until stations began not putting it on the air in the early 70s because they wanted their local disc jockeys on the air on weekends. And so that proved to be fatal.
Monitor.
I have a recollection, and I could be wrong on this. My recollection that in the early years of Monitor, it came on Friday night.
It did. It did. It was from 1957 until 61, 2 hours on Friday night. It also, in the summer of 59, was on every night for 2 hours, Monday through Friday. NBC kept cutting back their programming and replacing it with a form of Monitor. And that worked until 61, when they finally decided that they were going to cut back. See, a lot of Monitor's hours, and this gets kind of technical, the 30 to 40 hours it was on a weekend, were in station time hours. The networks had what they called option hours back then, when they could compel clearance of the program on the air. They could compel the affiliates to put it up. Well, those were where they put their advertising, the spots, their commercials, the network did. But all those other hours were sustaining in terms of the station may or may not put it up, so we're not going to sell it heavily. Well, that became too much of a burden for NBC to bear in terms of advertising, in terms of how much it cost. So in 61, they cut it back to 16 hours, and that's how it remained most of the rest of its life. But those were all hours that were sponsored, et cetera. So, yeah, it was on for many, many hours in the late 50s into the early 60s. Yes.
Okay,
go ahead.
If I can jump in here, in June of 1967, Monitor celebrated its 12th anniversary.
Yep.
And for the entire weekend, there was one sponsor. It was DuPont. They sponsored everything all weekend long. Every ad was DuPont. And it was top heavy with the Bob and Ray ads for DuPont.
It was the greatest single buy in the history of network radio before and since. That weekend, DuPont bought all of Monitor, every commercial on Monitor, for $250,000. which doesn't sound like a lot of money.
Total?
But back, yeah.
Total play?
Yeah, $250,000, right.
Well, that would be about almost $2 million now.
Yep. And like every spot was DuPont. Virtually all of them were Bob and Ray comedy spots. And it's June 10th and 11th, 1967. If you want to hear what great radio sounded like, NBC that weekend put everything in the monitor. Every personality they had was on monitor because it was heavily sponsored. They wanted to make an impression, et cetera, et cetera. It was as good as monitor would ever sound. And that was probably the high point of the show right there that weekend. So
they replayed a lot of spots that they had from their archives, too, that weekend.
Yes, yes. It was a great show.
What decides for you gets digitized? Is it random, or is it, or do you pick specific dates and stuff like that there?
I guess that ball's in my court. When I first started it, I intended, and sometimes I've had to sidetrack this, but my intention is to go year by year in linear form, start with January of 67, February of 67, March of 67. But, there's been instances where I've segued, we're getting close to Christmas time, so I'll fast forward and, try to, glean the broadcast from December, Christmas time of 1967, so you can celebrate the season, these many years afterwards, just to celebrate the spirit of the season. But, yeah, that's my intention, just to do it in linear fashion, as they appeared in sequence.
So we should also say, though, that, George, if the tape often that you found has been physically spliced with segments missing, with certain things inserted. And so we're not going to generally put that stuff up because it would make no sense. But we want monitor to sound as it sounded when it went on the air. And so you don't put everything up that you've got. It has to be
No. There's a certain percentage, as in anything, that is inferior sound quality, and I would never take the time or waste the time to try to do anything with that. It's just irretrievable.
And we also have to say, and this is kind of a secret, that Warren would often, as you know, George, insert himself into the live monitor broadcast. So he might...
Mr. Microphone,
Mr. Microphone. Well, we're not going to put that on the air because it would confuse the audience as to, well, who is this guy? And he's on the website on every page that we have audio. He's on the website with an acknowledgement because we owe this to him. But putting him on the air would just completely confuse the audience, thinking that's how it aired on the radio network, and that's not how it aired on the radio network.
Well, it's not gone to waste. He's on the B reel, just in case anybody's interested to listen to his outtakes of his inserting himself in the show.
Wow. Okay. But
and his dog too. His dog has fair representation there too.
Yes. So the answer.
I would say that Bob and Ray also monitor made Bob and Ray popular
to a national audience, but they were widely known in Boston when they started out at WHDH, and then in New York City they were widely known there. And yes, Pat Weaver put them on the radio network in 1955, where they had a remarkable job. Their job in the early days was to hang around Radio Central all weekend, all 40 hours. And if anything went wrong, and things often went wrong because you're switching live from one part of the country to the other, the person may not be there on the other end, the line may go down, they had to ad lib to cover
the
mistake.
Back in the late 50s there for about one season, they had their own show on CBS. It was known as Bob and Ray Present the CBS Radio Network.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Not the other way around. Not CBS presents Bob and Ray. It was Bob and Ray presents CBS.
Boy, that was taking a chance.
What was taking a chance?
It was a 15-minute a night broadcast, and they held their own. It was pretty good. So no studio audience or anything, but they had name recognition as early as, they had been well established prior to that point, but that, they got some network exposure there on a, continual basis.
So Bob and Ray were legendary on monitor, and they won a Peabody Award while they were on monitor. And then, of course, the other great comedy team that was on monitor, It was Mike Nichols and Elaine May. Absolutely magnificent in the way they did their routines, which were heard until the late 70s on Monitor. They would come in once a week, and a Monitor producer would just say, how about doing something on such and such? They would literally ad lib those routines that you hear on Monitor. They were that brilliant.
Like Second City.
Yes, that's where they got it. That's where they got it. So all the stuff that you hear that you think, wow, they really took a while to write that, they took no time to write it. They knew each other's mind. Elaine May, Mike Nichols were brilliant at what they did. And so when you hear these, just remember they're ad-libbing it. It's that good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that good. It's not scripted at all.
Nope. Nope.
Okay. I'm going to thank you guys. I wish I could help out. I know you guys are getting down the crunch time. If there's any way I can help, I would like to. But
here's how
if you have
help.
Any friends with tapes, let us know.
Here's how you can help.
Okay.
You tell your friends about the website and have them go visit the website, okay? And listen.
I will.
And then maybe they can tell your friends.
Right, because I don't know anyone in my neighborhood that didn't hear the show.
Well, tell them that we're here.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling in.
God love you. Thank you very much. We enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you. And God bless you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The first caller we've ever had during all these years from Sacramento, California. And I know that Don Spieler is listening down in Los Angeles. He does every year. He listened to Monitor on KFI, and he'll probably email me now that I've mentioned his name. But Walden and John, how can people call in? What's the phone number to call in here?
714. I'm sorry. I talked over you, Walden. Go ahead.
714-545-2071. It's 714-545-2071.
Love to hear from you folks. If you're out there, wherever you are in the United States or around the world, first time we've ever heard from Sacramento. But gentlemen, we do need to acknowledge somebody who is not here tonight for the first time in 15 years. And I know he's played a major role in your radio networks, and he was a great friend of all of ours. And that's Jim Taylor, who passed away New Year's earlier this year at the age of, I believe, 70 or 71. He was a great contributor to this radio network and a great friend of mine. Jim and I would talk once a month, every Saturday night. We did this for 14 or 15 years. He would call, and we would talk about old-time radio. He was without doubt. And, George, you're very good, and I'm pretty good. But Jim Taylor had a photographic memory. He could remember everything about network radio. I mean details for all the years network radio lived. He was magnificent to talk to.
Encyclopedia.
Photographic memory.
Yes.
I mean, he could literally remember listening to Monitor on a particular night. And he would tell me, now that was on a Saturday night in January of 1971. And he'd be right. And I could, and I tested him one time. Jim was this good. I said, okay, you have a photographic memory for dates. And I said, now, what day was January 3rd, 1967 on? He'd tell me what day it was. And I'd be looking it up. And he'd be right. He'd be right.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I tested this guy. He was brilliant. He was a good man and a big loss for Yesterday USA. And he was a great historian for network radio. And John and Walden, why don't you talk about Jim?
We have a call before we do that. Ed,
we will.
Baltimore, you're on with Dennis and Joy. Go ahead, Ed.
Baltimore. All right.
Hi,
we've never had Baltimore. Hi. Who is this?
Never had Baltimore. Well, you had an affiliate in Baltimore, WBAL, that carried
Indeed.
The program from 1955 to when it went off in 1975, in January of 75.
Yep.
And I remember the first broadcast of Monitor, which was only 8 hours, from 4 p.m.
Yes.
on a Sunday night to midnight.
Yep.
And that was like around June 8th.
June 12th, 1955. Yep.
All right. And that was the week before they started their full schedule. Now, I heard a lot of the regular full schedule, but not everything because the show was so long. Originally, it started at 8 o'clock. We picked it up at 9. I could get WRC out of Washington, which carried actually more than BAL did. BAL was a big sports station, and Monitor was a perfect fit for it because it would carry like the Saturday morning schedule. And when the at that time Colts and Orioles weren't playing, they would carry Saturday afternoon and into the evening. About 10:30 at night, they cut it off. They didn't have Ted Steele that used to do the show overnight. In the early days, I think it was Ted Steele. And then Saturday morning, NBC would come back along with its, church shows, the National Radio Pulpit, the Eternal Light, and the Catholic Hour. And about 11 o'clock, Monitor would start up in Washington. We didn't pick it up because we had a local church program on BAO at 11 o'clock. And so I was lucky enough to be able to get the signal with WRC pretty good out of D.C. And, of course, being an O&O, they had, they were more dependable about carrying Monitor. Now, later on, they weren't. NBC stayed, O&O started bailing out.
Right.
BAO remained it. An affiliate, to remain carrying it because it was convenient for them. They had something to, after the Colts were finished their season, they had something to put on in the wintertime on Saturday afternoons and evenings and Sunday afternoons and evenings. I remember in the early days, they used to have Miller High Life, Marlboro cigarettes. Miller was at the top of the hour and Marlboro was at the bottom, or maybe the other way around. It's been a long time.
Yes.
Since I heard it originally. But it was entertaining. It was a great show. Steve Allen did it. Not Steve Allen. Who was the guy that did the morning show?
Saturday morning?
Steve. No, on the television.
Oh, Garraway, Dave Garraway.
Dave Garraway did it on Sunday nights.
Yes, he did.
And I guess he must have slept there because he did the 9 to midnight portion. And then, of course, he was on the Today Show the following Monday or the following day.
You are exactly right. That is exactly what Dave Garraway did. He slept overnight after he finished Monitor on Sunday night so that he could be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and do Today. And he did that for five years.
He only had 4 hours of rest then.
Yep. NBC was
That's called
him.
Devotion.
Yeah. Well, they paid him money as well.
That'll do it, too.
I'm sure they did. He was very good.
He was a great, great interviewer. There's absolutely no question about that.
And, of course, Monitor had a lot of interviews.
Yep.
I was always surprised they got him that late on the show because of the – but then, of course, you say he made a good deal of money out of doing that.
Well,
In the latter years of Monitor, I didn't listen to it so much because – they started using jocks from WNBC in New York.
Yes, they did.
Like that.
Yes, they did.
The quality in the 70s had just gone down tremendously.
Yes.
And I think they were just keeping it on the air.
I think they were trying to reach the youth market, which wasn't listening in the first place.
No, they would have been on top 40 stations.
Right.
And Monitor was the kind of show that they could only be so progressive without making itself irrelevant to network radio.
That's right. There was always the problem, and Monitor had this from the very beginning, of satisfying the musical desires of 210 affiliates. You could never satisfy all of them. And so in the mid-60s, they became much more progressive with middle-of-the-road stuff. You had Petula Clark. You'd certainly still have Perry Como. You'd have Dean Martin. You'd have Stephen Eady, who were still very relevant then. Sinatra, Tony Bennett. But in the 70s, when stations began pulling away, it was really difficult to satisfy those affiliates. And of course, in 73, they threw something up on the wall on Saturday Night Monitor where they brought in Don Imus, Robert W. Morgan, and Wolfman Jack.
I remember him.
Host. Oh, God, it was just completely out of character.
Oh, I remember Wolfman Jack, too.
Oh, yeah.
But I had become less dependable as far as a listener. And, of course, by that point, I was probably in early manhood, maybe 23, 25 years old. When the show started, I was only 12 years old. In the early days, it didn't have that problem because the music that they played was more palatable for a network audience, and a lot of the stations were middle-of-the-road stations anyway. Some of them became rock stations in the 70s, including WNBC.
Yeah.
Then they flipped it over to the FM, and I don't know if the FM kept it until it went off or not. But WBAL did. They were they had it from the first day it was on until it went off in 1975. Week of January.
Yes, you're right. You are correct. Did you listen to it that last weekend on BAL?
I think I heard portions of it, yeah.
If you listen, if you dial into the website there, you can actually hear the voice of the Warren Gerby, the man that recorded all these shows.
Yes. He was on Monitor the last weekend, as a matter of fact, with Big Wilson, one of the hosts.
Oh, he worked? Oh,
yes. Warren Gerby called in. And little did we know that 25 years later, he would become the savior of Monitor with George getting the tapes. And when George first talked to me about Monitor, he said, well, I got these recordings from a guy named Warren Gerby. And the name rang a bell, believe it or not. And it was 40 years later. So I went to that last weekend of Monitor because I knew there was a guy on the air who had been a longtime Monitor fan. It was Warren Gerby
Warren was a listener, right? He wasn't professionally involved in broadcasting.
Oh, no. He was just a guy who loved Monitor more than anybody ever loved it.
And on top of that, as an aside, on the last day of broadcast, I believe it was like January 25th of 1975, Warren sent to NBC 20 roses, each representing the year it was on the radio, 20 roses, 20 years.
Yep. And John Bartholomew Tucker mentions that. Yeah.
He only lived to be about 55, right?
Yes. He died in January of 2000.
And you know what? I feel really bad in so many ways about that, but he did not live long enough to see the website, which went up in October of that year. He missed it by 10 months because who knows? He might have found it and said, wow, I've got these tapes and you guys could have it. But it wasn't.
He was a high school teacher who taught mathematics.
Oh, yes. Okay. But he was a boy, I guess, when he started listening to the show.
Yes. We all were.
He would be younger than me. I was born in 43.
Uh-huh. No, he's
12 years old.
No, actually, you're 2 years old. He was born in 1945, so you're 2 years older than he. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was only 12 when Monitor came on the air. I knew it was coming on because BAL had given it some publicity, and so did the network. And of course, the premiere, the 8-hour original show, that was from 4 p.m. on Sunday till midnight.
Yes.
And then the following week, the whole schedule started. But I got a question. Did NIS have anything to do with the abolishment of Monitor?
Yes. It had everything to do with
I figured it did.
Because
yeah,
the president
they wanted
of NBC,
to clear the network for.
That's right. The president of NBC Radio in 1974 was Jack Thayer. And Jack Thayer did not care much about Monitor. And so he was looking for a way to keep the network lines alive during the week. So he went out to lunch, and I recount this story in one of my books on Monitor. He goes out to lunch with a friend of his in Manhattan. And the guy says, the problem is your network lines are fallow during the week. And he said, what do you mean they're fallow? Well, there's nothing on them. You're dark. You're not making any money. You got to do something. So he comes back from lunch, and he brings Russ Tornabene up to his office. He was a vice president for NBC Radio at that point. And he says, man, I've got a great idea. We got to put this all news service on 7 days a week, and that'll keep the network lines alive, and people will, the affiliates will clear it, and we'll make a ton of money. Here's the problem with that. NBC Radio never surveyed the affiliates before they put NIS on the air. They didn't send out a questionnaire. They didn't ask the affiliates if Monitor should be canceled because there were still 125, 130 affiliates carrying it. They just announced it was going off the air so that NIS, they didn't announce NIS immediately. That came a month or two later, that NIS was going to replace it. So guess what
happened? That was a total disaster.
Absolute disaster.
It lasted about 18 months.
Because no more than 30 stations ever cleared it, and no one advertised on it because only 30 stations were clearing it. And the answer nobody could give me when I researched my books in the early 2000s. Okay,
can I jump in here for those of you who don't know what NIS stood for? It stands for News and Information Service.
Right, 24 hours of news on the NBC Radio Network. It was ahead of its time.
Now here, okay. WBAL never carried it. They carried only
right.
FM. WBAL
right.
FM.
None of the NBC O&Os carried it.
It was okay for them because they could be a news station without having to put a lot of money into it.
Right.
But WRCAM carried it in D.C.
FM.
Pardon?
FM. The NBC O&O FMs carried it. KNBR FM in San Francisco.
Sorry. Right. Yeah, the Washington FM station, WRC-FM, was a beautiful music station at the time, and WRC-AM carried NIS.
It was an absolute disaster that resulted in the destruction of the radio network.
Right.
And once NIS left in 18 months, there was hardly anything left of NBC Radio, and Jack Thayer, of course, left because he had done his work. He had destroyed the radio network. And it was a tragedy. But nobody could tell me the answer to this question. Saturday morning Monitor, until the very last weekend, always fully sponsored because it was cleared by virtually every station. There were no sports preemptions on Saturday morning.
No,
it was always fully sponsored. Why didn't they leave Saturday morning Monitor on the air? No one could tell me the answer to that because no one ever thought of it.
Yeah, they didn't have to kill the whole thing.
Nope.
Monitor could have basically going on indefinitely, particularly when you had large stations that were sports oriented and you could use Monitor as a filler.
Yep.
You know, when a game would get rained out, BAL would just, that's all they had was a news guy. They didn't have any personalities on the weekend. And because they had Monitor to do that. And then of course, if the, if there was somebody doing sports in the sports department, you know, for football or baseball, particularly would take care of that. But NIS basically did destroy the National Broadcasting Company on radio.
Absolutely.
They were never to come back. CBS never let their format go completely. They always had something on. They weren't continuous like Monitor, but they always had something on. And, of course, until Monitor went off, so did they. Now, NIS didn't actually pick up a lot. I don't think WNBC carried it, did it?
No, never.
FM.
Right.
Was it only FM in New York?
It was FM in New York, yes.
That's what I thought.
Oh, yeah. The affiliates had never been surveyed about whether they would accept this program, and therefore, what a shock it was to Jack Thayer and NBC when they put this baby up there, and no one cleared it. No one cleared it.
No. And like in Detroit, WWJ, which had been NBC because JR was CBS.
Right.
they, after NIS collapsed, they joined CBS, became a news station, which they are now.
Yes, a lot of stations were so disgusted with NBC that they indeed dropped their affiliation. It was a complete destruction of the radio network. Jack Thayer had done his job very well, completely destroyed it.
And then, of course, in the early 80s, when GE bought the pair, the TV and radio, and then they just made a decision that apparently they didn't want to stay in radio.
Yep.
So they sold it to Westwood One or some outfit that owned just about everybody else. They had Mutual and NBC together. And then in later years, sometimes on the weekend, they would just have the same newscast with different rounders at the beginning of the newscast. You know, if you were NBC, you'd get the NBC rounder. If you were Mutual, you'd get the Mutual rounder. So in Nashville, you know, you had 50,000 watt WSM,
yep,
and probably some 250-watt Mutual stations there carrying Mutual station carrying the same thing. I don't know who Mutual was at the time, but I don't think it was anybody big there.
Mutual never had anybody big. But no, you're absolutely right. And what he's talking about, what you're talking about, is they would have the two different opens for the same newscast on two different radio networks. One open would say NBC Radio News, and in the exact same period of time, those 3 seconds off the top, another open would say Mutual Radio News, and then the same newscaster would cut into both networks and then end it 3 minutes later. That was their effort to save money, right?
And then, like in, you know, when Desert Storm and all came along, the commentary for long form stuff was almost non-existent, and WSM started carrying Associated Press, which was completely out of their line. Then a couple of years later, they dropped that. Well, I'm going to let you guys go.
Thank you very, very much
thank
for
you,
your
Baltimore.
Expertise and your feedback. Thank you very much.
But wow, Monitor will always be remembered.
Nice talking with you.
We hope
nice
so.
Nice talking to you guys, too. Good night.
Thanks a million.
Sacramento and Baltimore, we've never heard from them. And Don Spieler has indeed emailed me out of Los Angeles. Thank you again, Don. He's listening. And he said, you may want to mention that KFI in Los Angeles was the first major market affiliate to bail out of Monitor in 1968. Yes, they were, Don, because they were not owned by NBC. Earl C. Anthony owned KFI. NBC had tried to buy it forever, couldn't get him to sell it. And so when KFI pulled away in the late 60s, the first major market station not to put Monitor on the air, that was the beginning of the end, because it told other stations, wow, maybe we could do that. And it was the beginning of the end. It took a long time for the end to come, but it was the beginning, yes.
Hey, Dennis, can I pick your brain?
I hope so. Well, there's not much to pick here at this hour. Go ahead.
Well, let me try anyhow. You've done a lot of research over the years about the affiliates and all this, especially recently. You've gone to all the old newspaper clippings. Is there any one affiliate out of all the affiliates that stands out in your mind that held on to it the longest?
WTMJ in Milwaukee held it until the very end, and now WBAL. KMJ in Fresno held it to the very end. I mean, there were 125 stations at the end that were mm-hmm. still clearing, most of uh-huh. all of Monitor. None of them NBC O&Os. And, I believe Cincinnati, WW, what's the WLW?
WLW, yeah.
50,000 bangers at 710. Yeah, they were pretty consistent until the end.
Mm-hmm.
But other stations had pulled away, particularly in the bigger markets, which could afford disc jockeys on the weekends and wanting to do that. WYOD in Miami was still very loyal until nearly the very end. WHO in Des Moines, very loyal until the very, very end. So there were stations that relied on Monitor. The problem that the radio network had image-wise on Monitor at that point in the 1970s, 73, 74, they had allowed their O&Os to pull away. And when you allow your O&Os to pull away, it's very difficult to say to the non-O&Os across the country who are affiliates, well, you ought to clear Monitor because it's really a good show. Well, if it's that good, why aren't your O&Os clearing it?
Right.
So that,
yeah, right.
That became an image issue. They tried custom Monitor.
We have Joni from Arizona. You're on
my gosh.
Wow.
Boy, they're lining up.
I love it.
Joni. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I heard the first broadcast of Monitor.
You did.
I think it was either June 12th or 13th of 55.
It was.
It was Sunday afternoon, I believe.
It was, yes.
And then that was kind of like a trial run. They had the San Quentin thing.
Yes.
I was not too happy when I heard that they were taking all the shows that were on the weekends off. And I decided I was not going to like this new thing called Monitor. And I first started listening to it, and I love Monitor.
Why did you love it?
It was very magical. It was very exciting. And Radio Central was this magnificent place where they had all these clocks and all these different things, and I love you're on the Monitor beacon going places and doing things. I'm 82 years old, and I just love Monitor, and I listened every weekend. And what they did in the all around 1957, I guess, for their weeknight thing between 8 and 10,
yep,
they had a thing called Nightline. You probably
yes.
know that was what it was. But what they would do would be that they would put the regular shows on, People Are Funny was on Friday night. And I don't know why they needed Walter O'Keefe and Nightline to announce the shows, but that's what they did. And I remember, I guess it was in the late 50s, early 60s, when Arlene Francis was on Saturday afternoons, and there was a commercial for Aunt Jane's Pickles. That was a ridiculous commercial.
Been a little out of her league.
Yeah. But I used to listen to Arlene Francis on WLR.
Yep.
I lived in New Jersey and listened to the New York stations mostly, although I was a DXer, and I would listen to stations across the dial that I could find. I loved DXing.
So, Joni, you were in New York when Monitor went on the air. Is that right?
I was in New Jersey, but I listened to it on WNBC.
Okay, all right. You are the first woman who has ever called into this commemoration anniversary broadcast about Monitor. And most of the emails or most of the letters we have on the website, and we have hundreds, are from men. Very few are from women. And I'm just intrigued by this because we know that Monitor had a lot of female listeners. But, you know, the expert opinion has always been women liked music and men liked information. You liked Monitor for its entertainment and information.
Joni?
Absolutely.
Joni, you have broken the glass ceiling.
You have. Now,
well, thank you. Well, I'm an old-time radio aficionado. I love. And I remember a great deal of OTR from when I was growing up. And Walden says that I'm a historian.
You are.
Thank you. But I love the whole OTR thing. And as I said, with Monitor, I was prepared to hate it. I was 15 years old, and I knew that there were problems, that TV was causing all the shows go off the air, and I was very upset because as I was growing up, you'd hear them say, this is the last program of this current series. And you'd hope, vainly hope, that the show would come back someday. And it didn't. But then Monitor came. And my family used to listen to it when we would go for drives in the car on a Friday night, or we'd go someplace, we'd have Monitor on. And my sister, who is about 5 years younger than I, remembers Monitor too. Not too well, but she remembers it. So I'm so glad that I don't have a computer at present, but I may have to get one.
We can make arrangements.
Oh, really? And you know, the thing with taping Monitor, in the 50s, tape was so expensive. I got a tape recorder, I think, in 1954. And 53 or 54. It was a Webcore.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And, but the tapes were so expensive, and I would have two or three tapes, and I would say to my father, Daddy, I have three tapes, and they're all full of things that I just can't erase. I just need them, because I would, you know, you would record over things that you loved, because then something would come on that you wanted to hear. And finally, I would say, I have a new tape, please. And he'd say, the new tapes are $8. A lot of money then. And he'd say, okay, I'll get you a new tape. But then I would have four tapes, and about a month or 2 months later, Daddy, I don't have enough tape. Go on and on like that. But then, I think I was not sure when I found this place that sold what they called used tape. And they were 1,800 but tapes. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you had 12, and you had 18, you had 24, which were too impossible to use. And this, I forget, was something electronics, and it was from Washington, D.C., and you could buy tapes that had been used by radio stations. Sometimes they would have recordings of the things that they had on them, like mostly disc jockeys. And the prices were wonderful. So then I was able to buy several tapes at a time, and I needed them for, I'm a person that's blind, and I had books read on tape for me by my readers and friends and whoever I could get to read them for when I was in college. And of course I recorded radio shows to listen to them, and then needed the tapes for books. But I would go to class and leave my recorder on, and I didn't have any patch cords or anything. And the microphone was on the other side of my room, and I closed the door and hoped that somebody wouldn't come to my room and say, oh, Joni left her tape recorder on, quick. And they would, I was so afraid that somebody would shut it off in the middle of my recording a good show. But I'm sorry that I left Monitor, but I loved it. And Fibber McGee and Molly, Mike Nichols and Elaine May, Bob and Ray, who were on they were on every Sunday night and they had a thing called Spandwich Surprise. You guys remember that?
I do not.
Same here.
Well,
tell us about it.
They would make a big thing having celebrity have a sandwich, and they would open the sandwich and make a big thing of what kind of a sandwich was Cary Grant going to eat that night. Open it up, there'd be a fanfare. Oh, Cary Grant was going to eat peanut butter and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something like that. It was, they were just wonderful. And Natalie Attired would say a song. Do you remember that?
Well, again, I don't, I do not.
Well, Natalie Attired was, I think, Mary Magoon, and yeah, she'd say the lyrics to a song, and it was just so funny.
Was that a Bob and Ray sketch?
That was a Bob and Ray thing.
Okay, I could tell by the name, even though I can't remember.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds, sounds strictly out of their playbook. Well, thank you very much for your recollections. They're very valuable. Do you still, just by the way, do you still have any of those tapes even now, or are they long gone?
No, they're long gone.
Oh, what a pity. Oh, boy.
Were destroyed. My cassettes were destroyed. I was in a few different floods. And
oh, boy.
Basically lost everything.
What a shame.
Where are you in Arizona tonight?
I'm in Peoria, which is right outside of Phoenix.
Very well aware of it. I used to live in Phoenix. Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-oh.
Well, I cannot thank you. George and I cannot thank you enough for calling in.
Thank you, Joni.
Well, you're more than welcome, and I thank you for having Monitor. Oh, I can't wait to hear the. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
You're on the Monitor Beacon. Yep.
Set Your Watch. We'll be back 1 year from tonight.
We will be.
I will be here.
Good. We're looking forward
to
you.
Well, stay.
Thanks a million. Thank you.
Stay tuned, Joni, because I know that Walden and John are going to play some Monitor coming up pretty quickly here.
Wow.
Fantastic. I can't wait.
Stay tuned.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Arizona, Sacramento, and Baltimore. We've never heard from them. And Don Spuler is still emailing me from Los Angeles, reminding me that once NBC dropped NIS or Monitor, they ceased their affiliation with NBC, KFI did, even though they hadn't cleared Monitor in years. So that was disastrous for the radio network. There's just no question about it, NIS.
Dennis, I always come up with one new question for you every year.
And I never know the answer, George. This is sort of like
a
TV
Your
show.
Your back's up to the
that.
Wall now. Here we go.
Okay. Walden, do I have a shot at answering
yes,
this one?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. It's going to see how creative you are.
Okay. All right.
It is 1970.
70?
1970.
Okay.
Dennis Hart is now the new president of NBC.
I am. Radio.
You are blessed because you know what the future looks like 10 years out, and you know what the past is like. What would you have done to save Monitor for another 30 years?
If I knew what the future was like?
Yeah. If you knew the mistake that Jack made in 73, we would know you not made the same stupid mistake. So what would you have done to try to save it for another 30 years?
Okay, I would have, number one, by 1975, Monitor had devolved into a disc jockey show with Big Wilson and John Bartholomew Tucker. And it was not compelling enough to have affiliates clear it. It was a fast-paced. There was a new president of the radio network, Thayer, and a new executive producer of Monitor who was basically a country and western disc jockey. So I would have reevaluated and said, okay, we can't program as many hours as we have been doing. There's no network radio clearance at night anymore. No one will clear it. So we're going to take Monitor back a few years and make it compelling listening. I had put some compelling people on the air as hosts. I mean, Gene Rayburn was far beyond being done in radio at that point. He was, as you know, hosting the number one television game show in the country at that point. So he could have been a host on Saturday morning. I would have asked Ed McMahon and brought him back as well as I could. He was with Johnny on The Tonight Show, and they had moved to Los Angeles. But you know what? You can get lines out to Los Angeles and have him do the show. I would bring back some of the major contributors who had been there, Arlene Francis. I would certainly have back. Hugh Downs was still hosting today. I would have had him come back. And then I would have programmed it from 9 to noon Eastern in the morning, exactly the way they were programming it. I would have kept the Saturday afternoon portion. I would have had a live four-hour Sunday afternoon segment, probably dumped Sunday night, et cetera. But my point would have been that by putting money into it, you could have induced some clearance that was not being had because it was not a compelling show in 1975. It was a disc jockey show. And then guess what? If I knew the future, FM was taking over and had taken over, but within 10 years, AM was going to be on its back again and would have welcomed a weekend show to fill some time out there, et cetera. Instead, what came along to fill time on AM stations? Talk radio came along, and Rush Limbaugh came along in the 1980s, and AM radio accepted it because they needed something to fill it. So, I mean, if I knew the future, of course, I'd know everything else too, right, including what was going to go on in the world, and that might have driven me crazy because I couldn't have stopped it. I couldn't have stopped what was going to happen. But I would have made it a compelling show. I would have told the radio network, in order to make money, we have to spend it. In order to induce clearance, we have to make it worth clearing. Our show is not compelling right now. It's a disc jockey show. At least keep Saturday morning on. At least do that, because it was always fully cleared, fully sponsored. But I would have done Saturday afternoon live for 4 hours and Sunday afternoon live for 4 hours with the best hosts I could find, the best talent I could find, instead of going on the cheap. And that's what they did. They went on the cheap. Sounded like a disc jockey show.
So, George, of the tape you've gone through, are there some that you are just keeping for preservation purposes and not necessarily reaching them to Lewis and Dennis? Are you at least preserving the ones that are not really sounding great, but we do have an archival copy of?
Well, I mean, if the sound is really rotten, what's the point? Nobody, you know, if you take a lousy quality sound tape and you were to put it up on the website, the odds are nobody's going to listen to it anyhow. But I'm just trying to, believe me, I went through this stuff years ago, and the really horrible sounding stuff is no longer in my possession. It's in a landfill someplace, because a lot of times he'd go out to these stations that were so far off, it was like, you know, getting a broadcast from Mars. It was so distant, so much static and so much interference. It was almost like a shortwave radio broadcast. So, you know, what's the point? I tried to save just the absolute best, and even the marginal stuff that I thought that I could improve the sound with. So,
are there any gaps you wish you had as you're going through the every weekend?
Yeah, we've noticed gaps. I mean, nothing is nothing in life is contiguous. You know, it's there are gaps, but you know, you got to deal with the hand you're dealt.
Do you mean particular gap that you wish you had a certain newscast or any news event that?
Well, Warren wasn't big on newscasts.
The
top of the hour newscasts is whatever reason he couldn't man the recorders, he'd turn over the duties to his father, and that's when the news broadcast seemed to have been recorded when Warren was gone, because I guess father couldn't be bothered to turn the machines off at the top of the hour. And I'm eternally indebted to his father for not doing so, because, you know, some of those news broadcasts at the top of the hour were very historic that Warren didn't see any future for. So, you know,
they really are priceless. And trust me when I say that if there is a top of the hour newscast that is complete, we put it up. We don't edit out newscasts. It's where Warren would often once the newscast came on, DX to other stations or do something involving his voice. And, you know, we're just not going to put that up. But when there is a new top of the hour newscast, George preserves it. And it's priceless for the website and for the historical aspects of the show.
Right. Exactly.
Priceless. I wish we had, and George, I don't know the answer to this question. Maybe you don't either at this point because we haven't gotten deeply into 68 yet. But I hope we have more hours on the weekend that MLK, after MLK was assassinated, after Robert Kennedy was assassinated.
Warren, whenever some historic event really, you know, came out of the woodwork and slammed you in the face, he would record it, like Kennedy's assassination, MLK, and, you know, anything. Like, what else was there in 68? There was, it was just rife with all sorts of news events, you know, the Czechoslovakian invasion by Russia in August, and the presidential election in November. I imagine, you know, I can't vouch for this, but I imagine he's got coverage of that too, you know, along the lines. But
it was a tumultuous year in 1968, and from my point of view, its monitor had to reflect that. It, after all, covered everything important in the world. But it's unfortunate because it's a different, more somber monitor in 1968 than it was in 67. That was an interregnum in 1967 and 66.
Right.
You could have more fun on the weekends, you know, and monitor could say, you're driving throughout the weekend with monitor, your music and information center. You couldn't do that easily in 1968 when you were covering assassinations. You just couldn't do it. And we're going to reflect that. We're going to reflect that. And in the next year, you're going to see 100 or more hours going up on 1968 that will absolutely reflect the culture of this country, because Monitor always did that. And that's
exactly
the value of this website. And, George, I can hardly wait. I mean, I have no idea what you're going to do, and the beauty is you don't either. You don't either.
I like surprises, but just generally on Christmas morning. But this is just a whole box full of surprises.
Every near the end of the month, and George generally starts sending these out the last week of the month, I will tell you honestly, to anyone listening here, I am delighted. I have no idea what's coming until it comes. I listen to it the way you would, which is, wow, do I remember this? Some of it I vaguely do. All of it leaves me with a smile because it's Gene Rayburn, after all. It's Ed McMahon. It's Henry Morgan. Each of them different hosts, each of them brilliant at what they do. And it's as good as radio could ever be, and better, believe me. It's a great show, and I value people tuning in. By the way, I always have the website open during this broadcast. We've had dozens of people going to the website here tonight.
Well, we haven't
monitorbeacon.net.
We haven't given out the URL yet. Go ahead.
It's World Wide Web, of course. Monitor Beacon, one word, monitorbeacon.net, Monitor Beacon. Or just type in NBC Radio's Monitor in Google and you'll find it easily.
Or if you just go into Google and you just say Monitor Tribute, it'll dial you into it.
And the books.
Absolutely.
Dennis, remind who mentioned the books. What are the titles?
I'll mention the second book, which is better than the first, and I'm proud of it. It's a Monitor Take 2, in parentheses, the Take 2. And you can buy it on Amazon. Just order it tonight if you like. I'm not advocating that. I'm never in this for the money. It was not the money. It's a good representation of what Monitor was. And somebody needed to write that book, and nobody did. And that's why I did it. And it was the joy of my life. One of the unfortunate things is the first book was published the month Pat Weaver died. I couldn't get it into his hands, the creator of Monitor. I regret that to this moment. I wish he'd seen it, but I hope he would have liked it. But
is there a third edition in the offing by any chance?
Well, now, you know, I'm getting a little old here.
Well, I'll see you through. Don't worry about that.
I'll tell you what. You've given me so much material. If I'd had all of the access to this material, the book would be 100 pages long. The book would be 100 pages longer. Who knows? Would you buy a copy, George? I'll give you a copy.
I've got both editions so far. I've got the money. I've got the money for the third edition if you write it. Come on, let's go.
No, well, I don't know what you're going to send me yet. I'm not sure how many more we have.
I have deep pockets. That doesn't mean there's anything in them. They're just deep, you know.
I cannot, and I am going to pay tribute to you. So just sit there and take this tribute, okay, George? You just listen. Without you, without Lewis, there would be, this website would be bereft, okay? We'd still have it up, but it would not have 450,000 views at this point because we didn't have enough hours. We couldn't get any new hours. You have breathed new life into this. I cannot thank you enough. I don't know why you do this every month. I honestly don't.
That makes two of us. That makes two of us. So, you know, God love you for loving me. That's all I can say.
I love you. You're doing great work.
Like a brother, yes.
You're near Chicago. What town are you in?
I'm about 15 miles southwest of Chicago in a town called Oak Lawn.
Oh, that's right. Oak Lawn. Okay. Well, my friend, keep pumping Monitor out of Chicago. Will you keep
Will
doing
do,
this?
Yes.
And I'll keep listening to it every month. And I always start getting anxious about the end of the third week. Is he going to start sending us? Is it going to be there this month? Are we going to make it? Can we do it?
I've never let you down. What can I say? Except for that time that I had my gallbladder removed a couple of years ago. That's when I dropped the ball, but the ball was out of my hands at that point. So,
And the gallbladder is not going to be a problem now, so we no excuse.
No. I didn't need that gallbladder to begin with. I'm glad I'm done with it. So,
George,
well, I'm going to sign off now, and all I want to say is, we're a little late, folks, so good night.
Good night, George.
Goodbye, George.
Have
I'm
a good
sign
one.
Off too. It's 11 o'clock here in the Central Time Zone. Good night, George.
You got to get some sleep, my man.
I do. And Don Spuler, it's only 9 o'clock in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for listening, as you have done every night here that we've done this thing. And Lewis, you're in Louisiana. It's 11 o'clock there. Get a good night's sleep. Gentlemen, what
so
do you
So long,
play?
Lewis. Good night, Lewis.
Good night.
What are you playing?
Good night, everybody.
I have no idea what John pulled out, so we'll find out.
I just pulled a couple of Monitor shows. One of them is the tribute to Frank Sinatra on his 46th birthday.
Okay.
Because it's nice. And then there's another birthday tribute to George Burns. And I would have picked something different probably, but. When I got home from work tonight, I realized I hadn't done it yet. So those are two well-known artists spotlighted. Yep. So we figured, well, we'll do that. Walden, if you have another suggestion, we can go
I
find
really
it.
I really like the Joyce Burns. I really thought that was really well done. So I vote for that. So.
And if those 2 hours aren't enough for our listeners, we have about 500 others on the website at monitorbeacon.net. Tune in. It's all free. And enjoy. And, gentlemen, I'd like to be here a year from tonight, if you guys will do this again.
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely.
I think by now we'll probably move back to the 12th. I think it will fall on a Monday or something.
Well, no, I think what we need to do is start on a Friday night and continue through Sunday night, and we'll just do a Monitor marathon and see who lasts.
Because now we are expanding the network. We're going to be moving to many affiliates here fairly in a few weeks, so we're going to have the contact. So maybe.
And you gentlemen are going to have to tell me how that's going to work and see if we can interact with a Monitor show.
Yes. Yeah, so
we can get DuPont as a sponsor.
There you go. There you go.
Okay, I'm gone now for good. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Good night. Have a good one.
We have a Miller Road station, a rock and roll station, several old time radio stations all blossoming this summer. So we definitely could use the contact. So
be in contact with me, gentlemen. You know how to reach me.
Sounds great.
Very good.
Take care.
Good night, you two. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dennis.
Good night.